This is the Football Vink podcast, and this is going to be a bit of a mad one, just like the game on the weekend. It's going to be maybe a bit of therapeutic for us both to get through the absolute monstrosity that was the game on the weekend.
Well, I don't know whether it's like I'm delirious. I'm still sort of like getting over the whole thing, but I'm just in a complete and utter state of farcical nature of it. Keystone Cops, whatever you want to call it, you know, Laurel and Hardy, you know, anything like that. It was the maddest 90 minutes of football I've ever seen in my life, and I was just laughing at the end, to be honest.
I mean, I was, you know, they say football fans are in two categories, you know, ones would be laughing at the end of that result and just, you know, like Klopp was real at the end, and just laughing at, you know, some, you know, obviously how bad we were, but unlucky we were at times as well. But I was on the end of the scale. I was absolutely fuming. I was so angry at what I was watching, and to a man, we were awful.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to a man. I wouldn't go to a man. There were a couple that maybe weren't as bad as the others. but yeah, it was pretty shocking. But to be fair, Villa done the homework, and they picked holes in what we had. And but to be fair,
we say they did their homework. But you know, these are elite footballers. They all do their homework. It's about how it's about how you maybe do that. And I think yes, look, it's a mixture of, it's one of those where you say, was that team very good or was that team very bad? And I think for the first time ever that I've ever watched a game, it was a mixture of both. I think Villa were very, very good, but I think also we were just very, very bad. I don't think Villa exactly made us terrible at times. I think they played amazing and everything went in their way. But I think obviously at times we made our own mistakes as well. It's not they forced us into all of our mistakes.
Yeah, I think we made mistakes and gave them a head start. We couldn't get our heads back in the game. And then they took advantage of that. And then their game plan that they'd worked on started to pay off.
I mean, I'm just this off the top of my head, we're not going to go through the goals. This is going to be a bit of a random podcast where we just talk about little events and what we got on our minds. But I'm just thinking back about five of the goals, all right? Look, no matter what way you spin that, we were going to lose that game. No, whether you know, you say we should have got the penalty, the deflected goals, we were always going to lose that game. But at least five of the goals, so you think, two of the lost balls, you know, one's from Bobby where he loses it, or Gomez loses it, I think, and they go and score. Obviously, the Adrian with the first one, and then three of them are just deflected from our own mistakes. And that's just from our mistakes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's totally. Nothing to do. And that's our mistake and Villa's luck. That's nothing to do with Villa playing well. You make your own luck.
You do. But, I'd argue a little bit against that, in so much that they were attacking, they were getting on the front foot, and then they were forcing the, not errors, but forcing the luck to go their way. We weren't closing down quick enough, and that's how the deflections happen. Yes, they were deflected, and who, you know, in a game, you get three deflections like that, two of them go way wide, one of them might head towards a goal, but all three to deflect at such tight angles and completely kill the keeper, I think is an anomaly. But they got to that point in the first place to take those shots, and we never closed them down quick enough. I mean, for example, I think it was the second goal from, you know, Trent was caught up the pitch. He closed his player down inside their half, but then he broke free. I think it was Watkins, and he broke free and Trent stood still. He made a great run down the line for the cross to put in, and he left Trent for dead. Gomez came over to cover, defended terribly. You know, he came inside, he shot and scored. Fantastic, you know, but we've done two defensive errors, and they've scored a really good goal. So it is 6-1 after the other, because it was a great finish, you know. So you can't top that. And obviously the first one for Adrian, well, the less said about that, the better in real terms.
Let's go into Adrian. Obviously, I don't know why. A part of me feels like it's a bit of a stunt, the whole... I'm kind of getting to kind of hope it, but I don't totally think that it's going to be... I could say he could... I'm definitely... He's missing Everton. I'm talking about Alisson here. He's missing Everton. I don't agree that he'll miss all six games or all 6 weeks, which is about eight games with Champions League and stuff. I feel like it's a bit of a let's say the worst case scenario and see if we can get back early. I'm not saying, you know, Klopp trying to play some mind games here. But let's say he is out for the 6 weeks in the eight games. Should we have signed another goalkeeper?
No. Definitely not. Because who do you sign that comes in and has got any understanding with the back line at all? We know Adrian's deficiencies. Adrian came in this time last year and done really, really well.
He won seven games on the bounce.
Correct. Yes, he made a mistake in the Champions League last year and we went out. Yes, he has made another one this week. But the reality is, I still would have in above Mingale and Karius. And you look at who else you're going to bring in as a second choice keeper.
And you look at keepers about these days and you've got the most expensive goalkeeper in the world at the minute. Kepa is now sitting on the bench at Chelsea on stupid money.
He is, but I don't think he went there as second choice goalkeeper. He went there to be first choice.
Yeah, I'm saying that, but we're in a world where, you know, the most expensive goalkeeper in the world is
sat on the bench,
and that's because he was awful, and you know Frank got rid of him when he came into the job. But you look across the league, I think United probably have the best set of goalkeepers. Obviously, they've got the only reason De Gea starts is because he's on, you know,
stupid money,
600 grand a week type of thing. And they've got Dean Henderson, who's their backup, who obviously was at Sheffield last year. And then they've got, I can't remember his name, but they've got a backup, their third choice, who is more than capable. But he's probably better. He's probably better than Adrian, if I'm being honest. But from second points goes outside of that, because City, I mean, United basically have two first choice keepers. We've got the best second choice goalkeeper in the league, easy.
Yeah, that's where I'm coming from. I don't see where we go for a replacement.
For me, he's the type of guy that you'll see. You look at Alisson in his first game where we conceded a couple of seasons ago, where he made that mistakes at Leicester. We go on to win the game, but he messes around at the back, and you see Adrian and Alisson now when he's in danger, he just sends it. Where with Alisson, Adrian now, he's starting to. You'll see in the next few weeks, as soon as he gets the ball, he's just going to send it.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to the ESPN the other day with Steve Nicol, which is well worth a listen to because there's a Man United guy on it, and he has a right old rant. But Steve Nicol's very, very outspoken in what he's saying, that he thinks the culprit of all of this is the high line, and we're standing way too high, and the fact that Adrian can't play the sweeper in the same way that our number one keeper can in real terms. And when I watch the reruns, like you see on the cross that comes in for the corner, you know, the cross is way outside the box. We actually line up our line outside of the D on the box, and Adrian is stood 3 yards off his line, kind of thing. There's no way somebody's going to hit a shot from that range. So he's not come off his line at all. And when the ball comes over the top, he stays rooted to where he is, and the ball's in behind. So is it a case of, for this period that, you know, we have Alisson out, do we have to adjust our style of play slightly and drop that high line another 5 or 6 yards? And to be fair, Steve Nicol was really, really adamant that unless we do that, we could see some more of this coming, because teams will have done the homework. With Alisson a little bit further behind, he's coming for those more, and you've got more chance of it actually getting stopped.
I mean, I understand with the high line, we think we both know that the line isn't going to drop. It's going to be exactly the same. We've been doing this now for over 3 years. This line's been that high, and I think you shared it, the fact that guy from the Rap said, I can't remember his name, does a review show, Sean Rogers.
Oh, Rogers.
Basically said that he's been saying since day one,
We're going to get
battered one day. We're all but over five years now into Klopp's reign, and this is the first time we've been properly, look, we've had our fours and fives with our unlucky, you know, you look at United, yes, they got pumped 6-1, but at the end of the day, they went down to 10 men. And it's, that can happen when you go down to 10 men. We got pummeled there because of our high line, and they got in behind. I mean, moving on to that, again, talking about the second goal, to me, I don't think you can blame Adrian, to be honest. There's no way Alisson, I reckon, comes for that. It's a great ball in.
It is.
To cut across. And tell you what, 9 times out of 10... He gets called offside. No, 9 times out of 10. That
correct.
I'm not saying the guy was off. I think it was on. Was offside.
He was well on. He came from
the actual original guy was close. He was very close. The original guy that cut the ball back was close. I think his arm was off, but because you can't score with your arm, he was onside. And then obviously the follow through where Watkins scored is onside. But for me, Alisson wouldn't come for that onside. 9 times out of 10, that gets called for offside.
So I must admit, I disagree. Because I looked at the rerun of that and his position, you know, I do think Alisson would have come for that one. You know, because it's so deep into the box and the line is so high. There's acres of space to run into, but hey.
But again, if he comes out and makes a mess of it, he's getting slaughtered saying, when you're coming out. So he's probably gone with the safe bet. Because 9 times out of 10, the guy get called offside.
Correct. But you know what? Alisson comes for Alisson comes for it and takes it. He doesn't mess it up. That's the difference.
But Adrian's maybe not comfortable that he and can. So that's why he does a safe bet and stays
correct.
In.
And that's my whole point.
All second keepers will do that in that position.
Yeah. Agreed. And that's why the argument is maybe you drop the line slightly. And Adrian is not comfortable with his feet. You know, with the first goal was all about, you know, being, you know, poor play out from the back, from the feet. As soon as that happens,
you actually look for the next, well, for the rest of the game, really. They don't play it back to him. We doubled or tripled their passes. And obviously we killed them in possession, but we did nothing with it. But we killed them with passes. And the amount of times we literally just passed between our back line.
Yeah, but it didn't go back to the keeper.
But not once, you know, sometimes they start to press and 9 times out of 10, we play it back to Alisson, we split up and we start, and then sometimes Alisson will play over the top just to break the line. But not once do we play it back to it. So that's one thing worries me if he is in for the next few games. Are the defence going to get that trust back in him?
And we'll let it, or are they just going to change their style to adapt to the keeper they've got? And I think this is...
We won't be changing our style. Not a chance.
I'm not saying the overall style, but I'm saying slight adjustments to the style to cope with the different personnel that you have. And I do think we might see some subtle changes to it, because anybody watching that will think we can do the same thing. And if, you know, to be honest, I actually think they've watched the Leeds game, because Leeds pushed us very similar. And with Alisson in, we still made some clangers in real terms and they scored goals. I actually think that with Adrian in, we're more exposed to it. And I don't often agree with Steve Nicol, but I actually did yesterday. That's a first.
Some people are saying they'd rather have lost that game. That losing 7-2 is better than losing 3-0.
What do you think?
Again, I said this to you the other day, and we'll get a bit on Twitter at the end of how the players are going to react for the Everton game, so we won't go on it too much now. But for me, the answer to that is all about how the players reacted. Last season, we got outplayed by... Watford didn't exactly play well. We just played badly when they beat us 3-0 last year. And it was a tough pill to swallow, you know, losing our undefeated streak, this, that and the other. But I'll tell you what, I felt better then. Yes, we were top of the league by X amount of points, but I felt better then than I do after that game. I think the answer to that all depends on how the players react.
I agree. Totally to do with the reaction. But watching the game, I got to the point where I was, you know, it was hysteria in the second half.
You can totally cop that on the chin as a blip.
It's a total...
It's a complete blip.
Correct. And that's where you're coming from, I think, with the reaction. It's an anomaly. That game is a one-off. You look at it, you go, how the hell did that happen? We won't let it happen again, and we move on.
A part of me thinks, you know, obviously, I think the commentator said that Klopp's, obviously, all the lads are going off international duty now, and Klopp's not going to have time to digress with his, obviously, he'll do it with his staff, but won't with the team, he won't be able to digress it, especially, obviously, the ones that are not there. Probably can with the ones that are there, but, you know, a lot of the lads, main lads have gone on international duty, so how are they going to, you know, debrief the game? And I'm thinking, going, there's no way Klopp's briefing this. He's going to walk into training, right? Well, that was a bit mad, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right, Everton on the weekend, this is what we're going to do. Because just dwelling on that and going individual, I mean, what would normally be probably a half an hour session debriefing will turn into a 2-hour session turning on just the goals themselves. But there's no need to, look, the players, Adrian know he's messed up for the third. Gomez know he was awful. There's no point pinpointing going, why are you passing that there? They know that. If you lose 2-1, then you can start digressing more.
Well, picking up on that point, what do you think of Gomez's performance? And, yeah, I'm picking on Gomez a bit here, but
Gomez was the worst on the pitch by a mile.
And what are your thoughts generally on that?
Look, Gomez will bounce back again. it all depends how he bounces back, if he does bounce back. But you can imagine, I can guarantee he's starting against Everton.
Thank you. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. That's what I wanted to hear.
He's starting against Everton, 100%. You've got to start by, and look, even from a, whether it's elite to, you know, what I play, semi-professional, constant change in the back line doesn't do you any favours. You just got to go on muscle memory, and just, you know, just play that performance out of it is what you've got to do.
I had a huge spat on Facebook the other night with some absolute tool who was screaming. I've been telling him for ages that Gomez is crap and we need to get rid of him. And I'm like, don't tell me that Virgil van Dijk at his age did not have really bad performances and learnt from them. And he's saying, well, let's get rid of him and let him learn on somebody else's watch. I said, well, so what are you going to do?
Get rid of him. So you're getting rid of a European Premier League winner out on loan is what he's basically
saying. That's exactly it. And, you know, and, it's like, and you're going to replace him with somebody who is not as good or certainly doesn't have the, you know, Gomez has the potential to be. In 5 years' time, Gomez is Virgil van Dijk.
He 100% will be. I guarantee it.
And this is the argument I'm having with this tool.
The reason you don't see much about Van Dijk if he's had a bad performance, because no offence to the certain team, but Van Dijk played for a small team in Holland, came to Celtic, and no offence to Celtic, they win every game anyway.
That's right. And then went down
and
to Southampton.
And then went to Southampton. You know, that's why they're not as he's not as scrutiny.
And that was
as
that
much.
Was my whole point with this guy that I was having the spat with. And I'm just glad because I've seen a lot of other stuff on social media of just how bad Gomez was and really ripping into. And it goes back to he's a young lad that's still learning his trade. I think people forget how young he is because he seems to have been around forever. You know, I really hope they don't take him out the firing line. He does start in a derby. He has a fantastic game in the derby, and he's back to where he was. I mean, Trent's had a stinker before today, and he's bounced back from it. And that was the other point I was making to this guy. And he's going, oh, don't get off the point and talk about Trent. I would never get rid of Trent. So, well, next time Trent has a bad game, you'll be the first one that's spitting saying get rid of him. They're young kids. They make mistakes.
I think the main thing about this performance was how the backlash is going to come from the media and social media. And there was a point on Facebook, actually, some fans were saying that the lads should apologise for the performance. And, you know, after hearing, you know, you hear the interview, tell you what, the interviews by Klopp, Robinson,
Van Dijk,
all really humble, 100%. It was all, you know, complete credit. We were just poor today. Complete credit to Aston Villa. They didn't say we should have a handball, three deflected goals. They didn't say anything. And not one of them apologised for performance. And I just seen a thing on Twitter saying you only apologise if there's travelling fans because they've paid money to get down there, they've maybe had a day off work, this, that and the other, and they made the effort to come down. And basically, I think it was John Gibbons put on Twitter, yo, what do you expect Klopp to turn around? Sorry that you had to sit at home in the warm, having a bevy, watching that game. I heard Corey probably was better. You should have watched that. You know what I mean? You know, what is he? He's not going to apologise.
I don't think any... These
lads have given us more than enough to maybe...
Correct.
If you told me 3 years ago when we were just starting the league, just before our league campaign, just the year we won the Champions League, in the next 2 years you're going to win the Champions League, Super Cup, Club World Cup, and Premier League. But then the following season, you're probably going to win the league again, which I still 100% comfortably think we will. But that season you're going to lose 7-2. And maybe you might lose 4-0 at one stage as well. You'd fucking take it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I've said in these podcasts that I think, you know, on these first run of games, I expect us to slip up. I don't think anyone's going to run away with this league totally like they did last year. No one's getting 90 points. I actually think it's going to be a mad year. I think we'll win the league, I agree. But why is you're damn right. Why should they apologise for anything? In fact, we should be sort of like thanking them for... So, the best three or four years of football that I've had in a long, long time. I've thoroughly enjoyed the ride, and even the downs. I mean, when we lose. Correct, but our down in Kiev, I mean, was awful. But but we still had a hell of a journey. We still had a hell of a ride. The ride to the cup final was brilliant. Our trip over there and everything else. Sometimes you just got to accept. You don't always get everything perfect, and you have to pick up, dust yourself down, and move on.
I want to move on to the midfield because I feel like they were completely
missing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even want to say they were bad because I think at times I don't think they exactly were. You look at their performance and you're like, well, actually, what did they do wrong, really? Okay, they gave a few balls away, maybe didn't track runs, but that happens in soccer. So I don't necessarily say the performances were bad, but they were just missing.
Goes back to, I don't know why you didn't bring Milner on earlier.
That, I was going to get that, into that. For me, from half time, one thing I was really angry of when I said I was angry was towards the end of the game, for the first time, I've seen this team give up.
Yes.
They did give up. And, you know, sometimes you say you can't blame them. You know, they were like, oh, 7-2 down. There was still 20 minutes to go. You can't blame them. But for me, I mean, it's Milner as well. But part of me is also, if Henderson's on the bench, Henderson should have came on at half-time. Because he sets the pace for us. Was he on the bench?
No, he wasn't on the bench.
I thought he was.
No, he wasn't. He was in the stand. He wasn't on the bench. He wasn't available.
I really thought he was on the bench. No. I swear he was on the bench.
And that's why he's gone on international duty to get match fitness. Wasn't
then I
the
apologise.
Bench.
Then it's Milner that then should have came on at half-time.
And this is what my argument with it is, in real terms, if things are going wrong, generally, the players on the park that dig things out for us are Henderson, Milner, Van Dijk, to a certain extent, Alisson. On the back line have been that dominant force. We needed somebody in the middle of the park to, you know, just grab it and to dominate and put their presence into the game. And to be honest, where necessary, give somebody a kick, which Milner did.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When Milner came on, he kicked somebody and he didn't need to, but stop it going 8-2. He put in a last-ditch challenge when, I think, I can't remember who it was, slipped. I think Wijnaldum slipped. And it's that what we missed. I think back to the Arsenal game. And in the first 2 minutes, or five, first 5 minutes, you say, 3 minutes, Mane pushed Bellerin over for no reason, and then all but elbowed Tierney in the face.
Yeah.
And that sets a precedent.
Sets a marker. Set to mark,
and there was nothing. There was none of that. Even when it was maybe 4-5, no one just absolutely snapped someone.
No, and you actually tried to
slow the game down. They go, "Wow, they're going to start kicking us. Let's take our foot off."
Grealish was running the show, and somebody needed to kick him.
Exactly. Phenomenal player.
He had a blind game,
but someone's got to kick him.
Correct, and that's what we were missing. Hendo, Milner. Yeah,
shows how important Henderson is to our game.
Correct, and we go back to all the Hendo haters and everything else. But the argument goes back to, should we always be starting Milner or Hendo in that midfield? Just to make sure.
I think when, especially, maybe not the likes of, I mean, I'm just going from the point of, well, that doesn't happen if Thiago's there either. I'm just pointing it out there. But I think, you know, maybe not for Chelsea or City or United or Everton, you don't put Milner in there. Because I feel like it's not so much of a battle or a dogfight. It's a tactical game.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, Keita's probably better football than Milner.
Correct.
But Milner can be thrown in when we are missing Henderson. Milner can be thrown into those games against your Brightons, your Southamptons, your Villas, where he will set a precedent, but still be able to keep up with the pace of the game.
You know, if Milner had started that game and he was the change at half time and we were 1-0 down.
Milner should have been the change at half time.
1-0 down, 2-0 down, and Keita comes on.
Minamino change at half time, it was
didn't
weird.
Work.
It was. I understand he was maybe trying to throw in a strike on, but no. Before we want to get on the positives, I just want to say Bobby Firmino was awful.
Yeah, he was.
And it's not an individual. Look, he was especially awful against Villa. But this is a thing that's not only been stemming from this season, where he hasn't really started this season so far, the end of last season, and the kind of looking at a lot of last season, where, you know, that big thing where he didn't score a goal all year at Anfield except for Chelsea, the last home game. Obviously, he scored some big goals, you know, Wolves away when we were happy to take a draw at that point when City got beat that week, and we went, no, we're going to win that game. So we went and won that game 3-2. Bobby scored top bins. But one of those, it's not quite right for him at the moment. Something's wrong there, and I don't know what it is. It could have been Mane not there, because it seems like if one of the three are out, the other two struggle to perform. So it could have been a Mane thing. but he's struggling at the minute.
Yeah, I agree. But you're going to get confidence issues with players.
And he should have been dragged early is what I'm saying.
Yeah, pull him off, change it round a little bit. Say Minamino could have gone on for him. We could have had Milner on earlier and shore this thing up. Somebody just to kick Grealish would have worked, I'm sure, slow him down a little bit. But that's the way things go, I guess, sometimes in football. And we just have to laugh about it, to be honest.
Let's move on to some positives. Jordan Henderson Waddles on the bench, actually. I'm just making a point here. I just searched it up. Optusport says he was on the bench. I'm just pointing it out there.
The stuff I saw said no.
Well, I'm looking at Optus and he was, and that's what I'm saying. But anyway, either way, the likes of Jane Milner, Jordan Henderson, if he was fit enough to be on the bench, he should have kept, maybe not 6 or 7-2, but at halftime he should have came on. But anyway, let's move on to some positives.
The positives, they didn't score the other three chances they had.
Salah got two and was okay. Was decent.
His finishes busy, were sublime.
They were just...
And that is a definite positive. I mean, he literally was getting one touch of the ball and putting it in the back of the net. And he hasn't been as ruthless with his finishing, since restart kind of stuff. So that's actually a good sign that, you know, he just gets back to just having a glance at goal and putting it in the corner. And he hit them with some venom as well. So I was pleased with that.
Jota, I thought, was decent as well. I think our whole left side, you know, Robbo was my man of the match if you had to choose one. But I think our whole left side was decent. I think Jota did okay.
Yeah,
as much as an attacker can do in a 7-2 defeat.
In a team that he's not trained with for any length of period. So I actually think him and Robbo were getting in each other's way a little bit because they haven't... He's used to being a wide player, not necessarily having a wing-back overlapping
even
all the
as
time.
Even as he was cutting inside on the edge of the box and he was supplying balls for overlap, sometimes the ball for the overlap wasn't quite right. It would go out for a goal kick or Robbo would have to stretch for it. But those things that are coming time...
Correct. And I'm just that's not me saying he had a bad game. That's just saying that's purely a case of they haven't had chance to train together and get to know each other, whereas Mane and Milner have a good interaction. You know, Mane comes inside, Milner comes inside, they make space for each other, little through balls and stuff works. So I think Jota coming into that, it leaves it open then for the front three to swap around a little bit. Just curious how Minamino fits into that, and going back to the Firmino thing, do we then start seeing us having a natural nine in Minamino rather than a false nine with Firmino? It's going to be interesting to see as time
goes
by.
Expecting Minamino to all of a sudden turn into this player, the likes of, Robbo did, Van Dijk did. The way I see it is, look, if Minamino turns into one of the players, fantastic. If he doesn't, and maybe turns into maybe like a Chamberlain who kind of does okay, but maybe not Chamberlain's not the right idea, because Chamberlain did do really well until his injury. But what I'm trying to say is, Minamino wasn't on our radar at all. We bought him at a chance. He played amazing against us, and he had a really good Champions League campaign, and we saw an opportunity in his release clause and all that type of stuff. He was an opportunity buy. He wasn't someone the Reds have been chasing for a while, like maybe a Jota who we have been chasing. So if it doesn't work out for him, it's not the biggest loss in the world, because he was, like I said, he was an opportunity buy. So if Klopp isn't going to go, well, if I sign him, or if I don't play this system, how's Minamino going to work in? It's going to be, I'm going to do this. Okay, now what do I do with Minamino?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, what I'm saying there is, if he's capable and more in a natural nine position, and it gives us an option of playing with a natural nine rather than a false nine, he's dropping off. But the other option, obviously, is putting Salah up top and actually switching Mane out onto the right-hand side and having Jota on the left. We have options there with Jota coming in as well to do things a little bit differently. Because, again, it goes back to defences are used to fronting up against our wonderful front three, but they're also watching videos on what they do, how they do it, and how to counteract it. We've got to make it harder for them and change again. So I can see us making some changes to how we play just to confuse the opposition a little bit more.
Let's move on from that absolute shithole of a game. Let's get on to some transfer chat. There hasn't been much. The only really one is Brewster out to Sheffield United and Gruwich out on loan again to Porto.
Yeah, I mean, the Gruwich one was a strange one because I think they were really trying to get him out as a sale and it just didn't happen.
They just wanted him off the books, probably. But
well, they were literally in a position where they were over their quota for overseas players. So it was either Shaq or Gruwich, and they were trying to get rid of either one of them. Now, I wonder whether the reason the Shaq deal fell through is the COVID issue, because that seemed to be going ahead, and then all of a sudden it didn't happen. Then the Gruwich deal they were trying to get through fell through, because they were adamant they weren't going to put Gruwich out on loan again at all. But once he got past transfer deadline, up to transfer deadline, and it wasn't going to happen, and they were able to ship Gruwich out on a loan, they took the opportunity, and that leaves us with Shaqiri in now as our final overseas player spot. So, and of the two, I mean, I know Gruwich had two good games for us, but of the
two, you'd rather keep Shaqiri.
Yeah, I think, look, Shaqiri's a seasoned international when all's said and done, and you know, when he's fit, he has the potential to do things off the bench, particularly in European games. I actually think he's one of those players who's going to be a nice luxury player in Europe, to be honest. Free kick specialists, all those kind of thing that will come into their own then. So, yeah, I think that it worked out okay, I guess, when all said and done. Could have been a lot worse.
Talking about Shaqiri and COVID, he is now currently the third active player to have COVID within Liverpool. Obviously now the fourth in total, with Tsimikas getting COVID in the international break just before the season started. We've spoken a bit about this over the phone and stuff like that. It's mad that internationals have been allowed. It depends on how many players come back with the virus. Is surely they will have to somewhat shut the internationals down. If they're going to keep the leagues going, which they need to,
it's
for money
ridiculous.
Purposes.
But apparently, FIFA have put a directive out to all of the associations that, and to all the clubs, that clubs must release their players for international duty. Full stop. End of story. Now, I know some Italian teams have now pulled the plug on it, and I wish we'd pull the plug as well. Who else did I say? Leipzig?
Said Salzburg. And Juve, the two that have done it so far. So Switzerland and Italy.
So it's crazy that we know for certain that 2 weeks ago, 10 players were diagnosed with COVID in the Premier League. And it was up to the individuals whether they released their names or not. The only ones I'm aware of are the Liverpool players. No others have been named.
It's interesting. Liverpool seem to be the only team that are getting the virus. So it's amazing how many of the other teams aren't coming out with it.
Correct.
With it saying correct. They might be saying they're out with a hamstring strain, but they're actually not.
Absolutely. And I can't see that all 10 Liverpool players, because if they were, I think we'd have announced it. Gary Neville gave a good interview at the time a few weeks ago when it all came out, and he said, for the thousands and thousands of tests that have been done, it's not a surprise that we're starting to see a bit of a numbers creep in the number of tests. And again, when you also bear in mind that the likes of the Carabao Cup, you've got Premier Leagues playing against
lads that are out in the workforce every day.
Correct. So they're playing against League One sides and et cetera, who don't have to have compulsory testing. And we've seen what's happened there. We've talked about it on this podcast. So they're coming into contact with players that are potentially positive, and there might be knock-on effects. So I think it's just something we're all going to have to get used to. There are going to be blips where teams have some players who are positive and they go into isolation for 14 days and teams have to play without them. However, sending players overseas on international duty, I mean,
is mad.
God forbid we're sending players over to South America that's absolutely struggling with COVID. Don't tell me that our Brazilian players are not going to come back at a high risk of having been tested positive when they come back. So they're going to be away for 2 weeks for international duty. They're going to come back and go into 2 weeks quarantine, which is, it's shit. So, and that's, we're lucky to a certain extent that maybe Alisson being injured might actually be, do us a favour in real terms.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
You know, he might actually be back playing quicker with an injury than if he'd have gone away on international duty. We wait and see, I guess, but now it frightens the hell out of me, to be honest, and it's not something I'm happy with, and I think the...
It'll be interesting to see how many come back and if the internationals will continue in the future.
But the fear, the risk is they come back and we end up shutting the Premier League down or the European leagues down because there are so many infections, it grinds it all to a halt. And you can forget anybody getting anywhere near the stadium and all the rest of it. And the whole thing goes tits up before Christmas. It's ridiculous. And and if that does happen, then the powers that be will have a lot to answer for.
100%. I mean, God forbid, it basically could get to a point where players going to have to die from this before properly things are changed.
Yeah, but
you say but die from it, but you say
but,
these
but it's highly unlikely because the medical levels of these guys are so high, so it's unlikely. But you know what? Family of players might who contract it because the players are still in contact with family and all the rest of it. They live in the bubble to a certain extent, but they went into a really tight bubble. Post lockdown, just to restart to get the game running again and get the season finished. But this season, now the season started, players are going home. They're mixing with families. They're going overseas for internationals. It's a balmy situation that we have to hope that the pessimists amongst us aren't right.
So we look forward to Everton away when we return. I said, talking about the Villa, we don't know if the result was, the result was never going to be positive, but you don't know how they're going to react till that game. And it now makes that a complete must win.
Yeah, and we'll probably talk about that about this time next week on the run into it.
Yep.
And we're hopefully going to do a live podcast before the game. There's some plans happening that way. And we'll do that live from a pub, a couple of hours before kickoff, and we'll have a few people involved in that. I'm looking forward to. I think that we're going to come back and really bounce into that. In fact, to a point where I don't think I want to be Everton right now. I mean, I know they're flying everything else, but I think the boys are going to come back and absolutely go at Everton big time to prove a point.
Well, all I can say is listen to some podcasts, have a laugh about it, relax. I think someone said, look, thousands of people are going to die because of this virus over the next few months. So if we can't laugh over a 7-2 defeat results to a shit team, then what are we doing with our lives? So take it on the chin and move on.
And still laugh at Man United because I actually think their results, even though they were down to 10 men, meant a lot more to their managers kind of thing than it did to ours.
Oh, well, we'll look forward to the Everton game in a few weeks. Up the Reds.